Let's just start from the very basics. What is Ayurveda?
So everybody knows that Ayurveda is thousands of years old medicinal science from India, which talks about preventative medicine and which talks about therapeutic therapy and interventions using various classical formulations. Now that is the realm of physicians. But for us, assuming our listeners are householders, Ayurveda is mostly about a blueprint to live our life well, so that we are not only having a long life, but also a healthy life. So our health span is as long as our lifespan.
Do you want to just explain the three doshas?
So the three doshas are basically called Vata, Pitta and Kapha. And if you look at any Vedic sciences, everything is in the Trinity.
Is there something that everyone can do? Regardless of the doshas, like something that we can give everybody a few tips, is there something that we should all be doing?
Yes. So there's something called as Dinacharya. Dina meaning day, charya meaning ritual or discipline around it. So our daily rituals, if we can maintain our daily rituals, they're almost like a framework that protects us throughout the day, helps us rewind and calm down, and then move forward with greater energy. So if anybody wants to have oodles of energy and a lot of enthusiasm throughout their day, they should follow the Dinacharya.
Let's just talk about women's health a bit, starting with periods and hormones.
You know, it is such a sad thing for me to note that nearly every woman who comes to me has hormonal imbalance, whether that is insulin resistance, or estrogen progesterone issues, or, you know, PCOS, PCOD. It is like a pandemic now.
Hey everyone, today I'm going to talk about a topic that is called also as the sister science of yoga, a topic that I'm personally very passionate about, and that's good health. We're talking to an Ayurvedic practitioner today. So let's see what we can figure out. Hi Salila, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi Prachi, it's such a pleasure to be here and to talk about your favorite topic, health.
Let's start by you introducing yourself. Tell us about yourself.
So, hi everybody, my name is Salila. I am an Ayurveda practitioner. I work on diet and lifestyle interventions, and I help people balance their hormones, take care of their inflammation, their gut issues with the use of Ayurveda diet, lifestyle and supportive herbs. And I do something called as a detox, a cleanse, which is based on Panchakarma, the five therapies that physicians do in hospital grade Ayurveda places, where we cleanse the body of something called as Ama, which is an endogenous toxin, which collects in the body and blocks our channels. So that is kind of my forte, that I'm able to teach a light version of that at home for people to safely do that, because I'm all about self-empowering, self-healing. So we are not relying so much on physicians. Like the really sick people can go to the physicians, and our aches and pains and fevers and colds, we can handle it at home. We can also teach the next generation to how to confidently take care of themselves with the herbs around our homes, in our kitchens and things like that.
Okay. So let's just start from the very basics. What is Ayurveda?
So everybody knows that Ayurveda is a thousands of years old medicinal science from India, which talks about preventative medicine and which talks about therapeutic therapy and interventions using various classical formulations. Now that is the realm of physicians. But for us, assuming our listeners are householders, Ayurveda is mostly about a blueprint to live our life well, so that we are not only having a long life, but also a healthy life. So our health span is as long as our lifespan. Because what's happening now in the modern world is that we may be living past 80, but the last 30 years, you know, or the longer period, we are all medicated. Like people get surprised when someone says you're in your 40s and you're not on any medication. Right? That's like the normal for everybody.
Yeah.
So Ayurveda empowers us to live till the very end with our mind and our teeth intact, the way I like to put it. So Ayurveda is often called the sister science of yoga, which kind of makes sense because yoga and Ayurveda are two very different philosophy of living life. They come from the Shaddarshana. The Shaddarshana are the six major philosophies which kind of hand us a blueprint on how to make sense of the world and how to live our life well. So yoga is one. And from Nyaya, from logic and reasoning, and Vaisheshika, which is like categorization of things, comes Ayurveda. And people believe that Ayurveda is 5,000 years old. Some believe that Ayurveda is 10,000 years old. But the sages, the ones who wrote Ayurveda, tell us that Ayurveda is as old as Treta Yuga. So Treta Yuga is nearly 3 million years old, right? And it's a shocker because I'm like, 3 million years old? How could Ayurveda be that old, right? Yeah. But when we think of humanity, the first humans walked this earth 6 million years ago. And once we start to get our head around that number, it starts to make a little sense.
Okay, so according to you, are all chronic diseases, the modern world chronic diseases, are they all reversible?
It depends, right? Like where you are at, how long have you had it? What is the manifestation of the disease? Is it just beginning? Are you in the thick of it? Or are you in a stage where it's called asadhya? There are diseases which are asadhya in Ayurveda, meaning we cannot do anything about it. You just maintain, you know, keep the person comfortable, give them a good quality of life, right? Okay. For example, type 1 diabetes. There's nothing we can do about it. Genetically, there is an issue. There is a problem because of which their insulin and sugar is not, you know, metabolized properly. Their body is simply at a disadvantage from a young age. So they will need lifetime support. However, Ayurveda can make their life much better. I have clients who work with me and their numbers start to go back into normal range. They are able to live a life, a normal daily life without aches and pains. They can eat food and enjoy food without feeling fearful. Because now they've figured out that what they put in their mouth, from the time they chew it to the, you know, the soup they drink along with it, they have the power to keep those numbers within a certain range. So that is how Ayurveda empowers us. And when we say this is how we reverse chronic disease, this is how it is. It's not like the disease just progresses and then continues to go downhill. We are able to arrest its growth and we are able to improve life with that.
Okay. Are there any modern world diseases that you think that we see today, especially allergies? And do you think they are mostly the cause of our lifestyle and can be easily avoided if we follow Ayurvedic lifestyle?
Absolutely, absolutely. So the first shloka about disease is Ragadi Roga. Ragadi Roga meaning, Raga meaning attachment. Attachment creates disease. Now, if you think about it, as soon as we are attached to each other, we are attached to eating a certain food, we are attached to watching our Instagram reels instead of going to sleep, right? At night, we are in the kitchen trying to grab stuff from our fridge that we should not be eating. Raga, attachment. When it comes into our body, now it attaches to our body. It does not eliminate properly. So even if I make the worst decisions throughout the day, however, if I was exercising, I was sweating, I was eliminating, you know, through going to the bathroom on time, sweating and moving my body, you know, if I was doing all that, those things that were in my body that were attached to my tissues, the body would do a good job of detoxing it on a daily basis and I wouldn't fall sick. But let's say I'm lazy. I take naps during the day. I lie on the couch all day. I don't do much of exercise. I hardly ever sweat. I don't go to the bathroom as often as I should. I don't hydrate myself enough. Now those, endogenous metabolic byproducts are going to stay attached, baked into my tissues. And then they're going to sit there and produce disease. So that is one aspect, Ragadi Roga. The second one is Pragya Aparadha. Now, Pragya Aparadha is a Sanskrit word which tells us Pragya is knowledge, that which gives us moksha, that which gives us enlightenment, that which makes us more intelligent, live better in this world, right? Get through this life with more grace. pragya. Aparadha meaning crime. What are these crimes that I'm committing against the knowledge that will lead me to enlightenment? Which is deciding to get that cheeseburger at 12 at night because, you know, it's so easy to do that, right? Or get into a relationship, which is bad for me. I'm with a person who's not good for me, does not make me happy. Or just deciding not to go see a doctor or deciding not to work with a therapist or get a trainer when I have the money and I still don't want to do anything about the progression of years and the breakdowns in my body that I'm noticing. I'm just like pretending to be an ostrich and just ignore it. These are all pragya aparadha.
Okay. There's something in Ayurveda that everybody is different, basically. Okay. But in the, especially today, like we see everyone around us either being allergic to gluten or wanting to avoid gluten or and dairy for that matter. What do you think about this? Is it a fad that has just started where all of us want to avoid gluten and dairy, or is there a real problem?
The problem is twofold. One, we've normalized the way of living that we do in modern world, which is highly stress-driven, highly vata-provoking. So when we say something is vata-provoking means it is constantly drying us out. We are all extremely nervous. Our nerves are constantly under pressure. Now, when nerves are under pressure, then naturally our metabolism and our digestion is going to be under pressure. And when that is under pressure, then our agni is not going to be burning so bright. Our digestive fire is not going to be burning so bright. So what happens when our agni is a few centigrade lower? Let's say the sun came out and it remained hidden behind the clouds for many days. We would all have a lot of diseases in this world. Why? Because certain organisms would start to gain control of the world, and organisms that were maintaining the balance, they would go down. So similarly, when our agni, our digestive fire, our metabolic fire is under threat and is not at the optimal, then naturally our microbiome is going to shift. Then the negative bacteria, the bad guys, are going to win over the nice guys, right? And then we have this alimentary canal. The entire alimentary canal has a microbiome. All our capillaries have a microbiome. Now, because our agni is not doing so well in the middle, all kinds of bad guys will start populating the top of our alimentary canal and the bottom of our alimentary canal. So which means we are having more plaque in the mouth, halitosis, all kinds of diseases of the gums. We are having IBS, we are having, you know, hemorrhoids, piles, all kinds of diseases of our gut as well.
So it's basically only because our agni is too weak now?
Our agni is too weak. And the second thing is we are also, sorry, I forgot to mention the second thing. The second thing is we are intervening in our foods too much, right? Our foods are, they're genetically being modified. Everything has a balance. After a certain point, we should give things time to like play it out and see how our bodies react to it. But then now everything is being driven by profit and maintenance of freshness in the supply chain of our supermarket aisles and shelves. So then our health has taken a backseat. So companies, big agricultural conglomerates, they are manufacturing foods which is good for their pockets, but not good for our gut.
Okay. Just because you touched upon Vata, do you want to just explain the three doshas?
So the three doshas are basically called Vata, Pitta and Kapha. And if you look at any Vedic sciences, everything is in the trinity. So the three doshas, the Vata dosha governs all kind of movements in the body. So anything like blinking of the eyes, the beating of the heart. It also governs conduction. So the movement of electric impulses through our nerves. This is also Vata. So if I'm sitting there breathing something that stresses me out, then my Vata is high. My Vata is peaking because the electricity is conducted too fast. It's going to leave me overwhelmed and drained at the end because I'm feeling my nerves are getting affected. I'm feeling weak. I'm feeling overwhelmed. Now, Pitta is the energy of metabolism. It's the energy of things shifting shape. Transformation. So I eat, let's say, a strawberry, and it becomes nourishment for my body. It's individual components, the vitamin C and all kinds of different vitamins in the strawberry that goes into my bloodstream and nourishes my body tissues. That is the work of pitta, because it is metabolizing that strawberry, right? Pitta is also that which gives us color, that which gives us magnetism, that which gives us tejas. So when somebody walks into a room, they may or may not be conventionally pretty, but if their pitta is balanced, if they have tejas, the quality of magnetism, every head turns towards them and people look at them and they're like, wow, who's this person? The third energy is the kapha energy. The kapha energy is the energy of sustenance, the energy of cohesiveness. Things stick together and construct themselves into like the organs and the organelles and our physical form. So if you have good kapha, we will have good shape. Somebody who's very curvy and pretty, goddess-like figure, that's a woman with a good amount of kapha. This, which is why goddesses are associated with fertility. Because when we have good kapha, then we have good fertility, especially women's bodies. Our bodies have to be juicy and glowy. Juicy meaning kapha, glowy meaning tejas. Then we are naturally beautiful women, no matter where we come from, no matter how old we are, no matter whether we are conventionally pretty or not.
Okay. What usually happens is everybody likes to take these quizzes to find out whether they are vata, pitta or kapha. What does that mean? What does it mean?
So all of our bodies are made from a combination of vata, pitta, kapha, right? All of us have vata, pitta, kapha in it. Without that, our bodies wouldn't have these things that are circulating, moving, transferring from one place to another, right? Constantly, there is things circulating in this body. All of us also have pitta. Things are metabolizing, things have a certain color. There's catalysts is happening in the body. There's acids and alkalis functioning. Various chemicals are working in the body, right? So all this is the work of pitta. Kapha, all this structure is being held. The body has a certain intelligence. It holds up a structure. It breaks down a structure, right? This is also kapha. So all of our bodies have vata, pitta and kapha. However, Ayurveda believes that some of our bodies have more vata than others. Some bodies have more pitta than others. Some bodies have more kapha. So somebody like me who has more vata in their body will be kind of skinnier, will have, dry hair, bones that kind of stick out. I mean, I'm no longer that kind of a vata anymore. But this was my basic body blueprint. Now I'm more of a vata pitta. They'll be willowy, they'll be skinny, right? They'll be very creative because vata is about air, vata is about nerves, so they're very quick, they're intuitive, right? They're visionaries, they can vision things that are far away, they can see that first. Somebody who is a pitta dominant person, that person will be, someone who is athletic, someone who's ruddy complexion, kind of brownish hair. Even though they may have dark hair, their hair will have a brownish tinge. They don't have to work out a lot. They will develop a lot of muscle because their blood is very strong. When they are in imbalance, just like a vata in imbalance goes towards dryness and, bones sticking out, a pitta person in imbalance will start moving towards anger, irritation, redness in their body, inflammation in their body. A kapha person is somebody who is an earth and a water dominant element body. So that body is going to have more roundedness. When they start to go out of balance, their body is going to create more bulk in the body, right? So they're going to also feel a lot of lethargy. They're going to feel a lot of depression. A kapha, balanced kapha body is somebody who we all love to be around because they are a calming, nurturing presence, right? So all of us are mixes of this. And when we take a quiz and when we, calculate, okay, I am 10% vata, I am 50% kapha, I am 40% pitta. So then we have some idea. What I like to tell my clients is take your quiz results and then look at what your dominant dosha is. Then go figure out what kind of diseases you might possibly get because of your dominant doshas. And then start to balance it with that in mind. Because anybody who's in their 20s is going to be 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. Age is coming at all of us. We are all getting older. And that means our imbalances based on our dominant body type, you know, mind, body, makeup, vata, pitta, kapha, that is going to start coming into play. So it is a way of making sure that I am protected from future diseases.
Oh. Okay. Is there any good dosha?
All doshas are great doshas. There are no bad doshas. Doshas just are. Just like the way the five elements just are. And dominance of any is not a good thing. Similarly, all doshas are meant to be in our body. Doshas help us stay in health. Doshas help us become diseased when they're out of balance. We can bring them back to balance as well. So doshas just are. There are no bad doshas. Okay. There are no beautiful doshas. Nobody gets a 5-star because they are an X dosha or a Y dosha.
So tell us a bit about health in a day-to-day life. Is there something that everyone can do, regardless of the doshas, like something that we can give everybody a few tips? Is there something that we should all be doing?
Yes. So there's something called as dinacharya. Dina meaning day, charya meaning ritual or discipline around it. So our daily rituals, if we can maintain our daily rituals, they're almost like a framework that protects us throughout the day, helps us rewind and calm down, and then move forward with greater energy. So if anybody wants to have oodles of energy and a lot of enthusiasm throughout their day, they should follow the dinacharya. So the day starting with one basic dinacharya we can all do is try and wake up before sunrise. Ideally, it is about 96 minutes before sunrise, the period of 96 to 48 minutes before sunrise, meaning, and that one is called as Brahma Muhurta, right? So if we can wake up in Brahma Muhurta, then we are all good. Maybe before we had electricity, everybody woke up in Brahma Muhurta and everybody went to sleep about maybe an hour, hour and a half after sunset, right? It was easy. That's how we all did. But because of electricity, now we are all prematurely staying up too late and then we are not waking up early in the morning. So what happens when we don't wake up early in the morning is, it's like that vata time. When that Brahma Muhurta comes, it is that healthy vata time. And when we wake up in that vata time, it's almost like we are, barges in the ocean, in the bay, that is like ready to catch that wind and move forward. And if we've got that healthy vata in the morning, it is going to take us far throughout the day. Another ritual that I would ask everyone to do is eat according to the circadian rhythm. So we are to eat as the sun is rising. So Ayurveda does not believe in three meals. Ayurveda believes in two meals. One is as the sun is rising. So about 2 hours after waking up, maximum 2 hours after waking up, we can eat something little. Or if we want to eat like a nice brunch, that is very Ayurvedic. So we're not going to eat at solar noon, but we are going to eat right before, because we want the pitta, that metabolic energy, that metabolic fire, to be burning after the food has entered the gut, not prior, right? So we're going to eat as the sun is rising high and become, reaching solar noon. And then in the evening, maximum... I'm sorry. Okay. So in the evening, we're going to try and eat at least an hour, hour and a half after sunset, ideally 7:30, and then sleep within 2 hours of that. So ideally 9:30. So if we've done this, then most of us are going to be healthy. Now, there's a lot of dinacharya we can do. However, this is something basic that I say everybody has to follow.
Now, this has always been one of my theories since I've moved to the West. That do you think Ayurveda, because it came out of India, they did not really consider the West in mind? Because over here in winter, sunset would happen at 4 o'clock, okay, or let's say 5 p.m. maximum. Yeah. So how do you manage with that? So let's say if you have to finish dinner before sunset, even if you're eating at 5 p.m., there's no way you can go to bed at 7 or 8.
Right. Yeah, I have clients from Sweden and Norway, and we do have these conversations. Ayurveda was written in a part of the world where we have 12-hour days and 12-hour nights. So how do we work this out for such places, right? We have to look at, we have to go a little deeper into when this person feels hungry naturally. We all feel hungry after a bath. We all feel hungry after a good, vigorous workout. So then we can maintain our bath times at such a time that after the bath, we have good hunger and then we eat a good meal after that. In the evening, let's say 4 o'clock, you go for a nice workout, a run, come back, relax, let your body cool off, make a meal, then eat that. So now your internal sun is going to help you digest that meal properly. And then after about 2 hours, you go to sleep.
Okay. Also, the wake-up time, the 96 minutes. Do you know where do the 96 minutes come from? Somebody asked me in my class because I was telling them about Brahma Muhurat, how it's a good time to wake up and do your yoga and everything. So I was a bit lost.
Yeah, so based on the ancient classification of the 24-hour period, there are praharas, which are like three-hour windows. And then there are muhurtas, which are like 48-minute windows within these. So there are, I don't remember the exact number right now, but it's like 48 into X number is 24 hours. So there are so many muhurtas in the day and there are so many praharas in the day. So that would be 24 divided by 3, 8 muhurtas, praharas in the day. So there are qualities associated with each of these praharas. A body has the celestial bodies like the sun, the moon, and the planets are acting on our body in a certain way. There's different music that has a different effect on our mind during the praharas, which is why, you know, somebody who's from the Indian background can remember, you know, if they have a grandparent, they would play certain ragas in the morning, certain ragas in the evening, right? Because this is telling us the passing of time when we did not have clocks. So people were in tune with their bodies at that time. And they knew this was a good muhurta. This is a muhurta for me to take my medicine. This is a muhurta for me to take a nap. So that's how they told time. And because they were so connected with their bodies would give them that right cue.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So do you have a favorite food? Like something that you always have to take to feel yourself?
Do I have a favorite food, did you say?
Yeah, something that's very important to you. Favorite, not just in terms of taste, but favorite to your lifestyle.
I would say I have a favorite drink, two favorite drinks. One is my gut bestie, which is something I share with everybody who comes to me. It is basically just filtered water boiled with black cumin, coriander, fennel, and a pinch of carom seeds. So this is what I use to hydrate myself. So I call it my gut bestie. So I'm always drinking some kind of seed tea, and that's my favorite beverage. The second favorite beverage is takra or buttermilk, which is again great for digestion. So I don't drink milk, I drink buttermilk. So I make that either from kefir or from yogurt. I use some yogurt and water, some ginger, and a little bit of curry leaves and cilantro. Just run that in a blender and then you have this delicious drink, which is highly, highly healing and very good for our metabolism, especially if you are challenged because you're traveling, you're eating all kinds of food and you want your digestion to be top, you know, top of the game. Because if our digestion is great, our emotions are going to be great. Our heart is going to be great. Our elimination is going to be great. If our digestion is bad, we're in a terrible mood. We are yelling at everybody. We are losing our temper. Life just feels overwhelming, right? Yeah, it's all connected.
And do our doshas, like the predominant dosha that we all carry, does that change with age or with lifestyle?
Yeah, so we all have our prakriti, which we are born with. Our prakriti is most apparent in infancy, before the world starts to affect us and starts to change that. Everything else we acquire on top of that prakriti is a vikriti, is an imbalance. So if I was born a kapha chubby baby and I started to lose weight as I became a toddler, and then I lost weight because I was a teenager and was starving myself to fit into my genes, then those are all vikritis. But when my body is in balance, I will come back to my natural prakriti. And that being in my prakriti is my best bet to stay healthy.
So it doesn't mean that everyone has to be skinny, basically. Everyone who is healthy is skinny is not true.
Absolutely not true. Each body type is unique. The prakriti we are born with is absolutely unique. It's like our signature. It's like our thumbprint. It's unique to each individual. This is not a mold we all have to fit in to be called healthy. We don't need a six-pack. We don't need a certain length of hair. We don't need a certain glass skin to look healthy. The way we were born, for God forbid, we did not have any diseases when we were born, right? If we were a healthy baby, then whatever was our mind, body, energetic blueprint at that time, our prakriti at that time, that is what we need to aim to go back to.
Okay. So let's just talk about women's health a bit. Starting with periods and hormones. Is there something that can be done, followed by all women, irrespective of the dosha, to keep their hormones in order?
Yes. You know, it is such a sad thing for me to note that nearly every woman who comes to me has hormonal imbalance, whether that is insulin resistance or estrogen progesterone issues or, you know, PCOS, PCOD, right? It is like a pandemic now. You know, it is something that is like so prevalent, it's almost normalized, right? So these hormonal imbalances, where do they start? They start from our diet, because once our diet is out of whack, once we are like living in atmospheres where there is constant stress on our system, because of which we are binge eating, because of which we are not using common sense, we are just getting influenced by media, influenced by peers, and doing all kinds of things that is against our body. For example, when we get our periods, we are not resting adequately. We are showing up and working like men. We are, you know, we don't understand that our bodies are very different from a man's body. The way a man's energy functions is not the way our body functions, right? There are 4 days in a month where all of us need to rest. And I visit these old homes in Kerala, these ancient, beautiful homes in Kerala, like the one where I am. There would be one room dedicated for women so that they could rest during that period time, or when they got pregnant. That entire time was a rest time. And they said that with every period, with every pregnancy, the woman becomes more and more beautiful because she's resting. So she's coming into her wisdom. Instead, what's happening with us, we are all starting to look haggard and old in our 30s itself because we are not taking care of that juiciness, that kapha, right? So the one thing all of us can do, without going into details about diet, exercise, or, you know, yoga and all that, if we can do just one thing, we would all balance our hormones. And that is sweda, or sweating. Ayurveda is big on sweating. When we start noticing that we are not been sweating, that's like a big red flag should go up. Like if a woman says, if I ask her a question, like, when was the last time you sweated? And she says, I can't remember. That's a red flag. That means disease is on its way.
So by sweating, how do you mean? Like a sauna or exercise?
Yes, you can do it through exercise. If you don't want to do it through exercise, you can start with sauna and feel that lightness in the body. Even taking a warm bath, like a nice hot bath, making sure you are, you know, doing some dry scrubbing so that the skin is clear and the pores are open. not using products on your skin that can disrupt with the hormones, right? Taking care of our body through our biggest organ, which is our skin, by sweating, is the first step towards balancing our hormone. And of course, we can go into details about diet and lifestyle after that.
Okay. So I completely agree with you on the fact about women need to be resting. And that's something I also like to tell women, that don't try to work like men. You're not supposed to. But with this whole new age thing of how men and women are equal in every way, with the word equal being confused as same. So even dietitians I've seen telling that if you are healthy on your periods, you should be able to carry on with your normal life. You should be able to work out. You should be able to go out on games and, you know. So what do you say about that? That's not true, right?
Yeah. You know, men and women are not equal in everything. It's a very reductionist way of looking at like what we bring to the table. Men are great at some things. We are absolutely like, we will knock them out of the park in many things. We are superior in many things, which is why we have been given the charge of holding and carrying a baby for 9 months. There is not a single muscle in this body that does not tire after sometimes if we put a weight on it. Like if I held this glass in my hand, after 2 hours, my hand would hurt. Maybe after tomorrow, I'll have to like amputate my hand because it was hurting so badly, right? But the womb muscle is so strong. So we have some very unique, miraculous things in our body. And Mother Nature has created us with all these superior qualities of like multitasking and having our eyes and ears everywhere at all time, right? We can do so many things at once. Like we are the perfect corporate workers, and we can keep our cool. We can keep our community together. We are the ones who bring communities together. We can easily smooth over ruffled feathers. This is all natural for us. Based on Ayurveda, women are naturally disciplined and superior. Men have to be taught. Men have to be disciplined. Men have to be given instructions to bring them up to speed to us. So if at all somebody says women were not, you know, educated so much, that's because our ancestors thought that they're already educated. They're already coming pre-packed with all the knowledge and everything they need to know, right? Mm-hmm. But they can educate themselves in other things, in poetry, music, arts, whatever they want to. But the basic stuff of character, a woman definitely has that prepackaged in her. Like she's always going to be the kind person. She's always going to think about the community. She's always going to think about how do I bring people together and solve problems. So she's already superior mentally. And physically, we can have a conversation about that, right? But women who do not rest, coming back to your question of what happens when a woman does not rest. I was that woman who did not rest. I was that woman who pushed through and did projects in my 20s. I was that woman who stayed up late and worked on, you know, whatever projects and deadlines because I wanted to be the boss's favorite and I wanted to get a promotion. I went into early menopause, right? So who do I have to blame? My mom used to scold me at that time. I have only myself to blame, right? Similarly, so many women now are coming to me in their late 30s. Already their periods aren't a problem. They all have PCOS, PCOD. This is all signs that something is not right. Our apana vayu, the energy of movement that flows downward, that eliminates in time, that regularizes our periods, all that is being affected. Why? Because we are not taking time to rest. Things are winding and winding and winding with no time to unwind. So then the spring breaks.
Yeah. That's so true. And unfortunate.
Yeah.
Okay. So some doubts concerning Ayurveda. Does Ayurveda or does not support the consumption of raw food, salads? Mm-hmm. Is that a big no in Ayurveda?
Absolutely. So Ayurveda, and this is going to surprise you, Ayurveda says that vegetables will cause disease if eaten raw, right? Vegetables need to be cooked with oil. So I was at an Ayurvedic retreat and they were giving us boiled vegetables. it's actually not Ayurvedic to be eating boiled vegetables because water is heavy. We have to.
I'm going to make a shot out of this. It's a huge myth in the West that a yogic diet is boiled food. And you know. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry, yes, to interrupt.
No worries. Water is heavy. So if I steam something, if I boil something, it's going to be heavier than if I bake something in dry heat. If I saute something in oil, that's the best way to cook vegetables because oils are agneya. Oils improve the digestive fire. So the way to have vegetables is the way we do it in India. We take a little oil, we bring it to a nice shimmer. We put some mustards in it, some fenugreek in it. Some, you know, if you were from Bengal, then some panchfuran in it. All these seeds which activate our digestive fire, which helps to digest that food. Throw some curry leaves into it, a little bit of chilies into it. Then we throw in the little spices, pinches of spices, and then our vegetables. We cook it. That is the best way to make our vegetables.
Is there a best time to eat fruits?
Is there a best time to eat fruit, right? Fruit is kind of, it again depends. If you were a young 20-something with great digestion, you exercised every day, you slept on time, then you can eat your fruit with your meal anytime, not a problem. But if our digestion was starting to have a little trouble, we were having those, you know, off days and indigestion days and diarrhea and constipation. Now we need to watch out. Now we cannot mix our fruit with our regular food because our body is slowly feeling challenged. So then 11 in the morning, so between our breakfast and our lunch, and 4 in the evening between our lunch and our dinner is a better time to have one kind of fruit to see how we digest it well. If that works and our digestion is good, our elimination is regular, and that's like a thumbs up to say, okay, maintain this schedule. This is better for you. Now, if you were pre-diabetic, as so many are, or diabetic, then we have to think about this again. Then it's better to eat fruit with something savory. So we sprinkle some salt on it, we squeeze a little lime on it, and we eat it as part of a meal. Then it will work better for our body because then that sugar will be kind of dressed. When the sugar is naked, it goes straight into the bloodstream. It spikes up our insulin. It challenges the body, right? So it has to be clothed with something that is salty, something a little bit fatty, something with protein. Then it'll make sure that we are digesting that fruit better.
Okay. Talk to us about ghee. Like ghee being such an important part of Ayurvedic diet.
Yeah, I know the vegans are not going to love me for talking about ghee and milk and takra and buttermilk. I did the vegan thing for 3 years. I was in perimenopause. Yes, and it destroyed my bones because there are several factors to this. I completely understand. And, you know, as a sensitive empath, I am all for making sure that our food is from compassionate sources, that we are not doing harm to others and the world. However, humanity has eaten a certain way for thousands of years and our bodies are used to it. So we have to go back to the old ways of like raising cows in goshalas with love. And then finding work for our bull calves so that we can have ghee and takra and milk in the limited quantities that maintains our health guilt-free. And these beautiful animals also get to live in the world. So ghee is considered elixir. It's amrit. It is gold. It's the most digestive thing and it helps our body assimilate all nutrition on a daily basis. So if we add a little ghee to our food, our lunches, it's an incredible way to make sure that our food is full of nourishment and that ghee helps vitamins like A, D, E, and K, which are like fat-soluble vitamins, to be pulled into the bloodstream so that our tissues are nourished with that. Ghee is also a very important healer for us. So if I apply ghee inside my nostrils, if I have major headaches, I apply a little ghee inside my nostrils, my body is going to pick that up and it's going to make my brain healthier. So I'm not going to have episodes of anxiety and overwhelm. I'm not going to feel defeated when life hits me, right? Ghee was used by the ancient surgeons for wound healing after surgery. So they would do these grafts, skin grafts and stuff like that. And they would make a paste of ghee and honey, apply it on it, bandage it and leave it on. And several days later, they would take it off and then it would be completely healed. So ghee is that powerful. Ghee is a very, very potent medicine against mental imbalances, madness, schizophrenia. Okay. If the older the ghee gets, the more potent it becomes. So I have ghee that is like 15 years old. And I know that if I can have it when I'm feeling like extremely challenged, emotionally challenged, I have a little bit of that. I know that's going to heal me. So ghee is literally medicine for every part of this body.
So when you say 15 years old ghee, does it change taste over time or...
Yes, it changes taste. It doesn't look, it looks kind of greenish now.
But it's still good. It's still healthy.
I eat it. I mean, I won't advise on a public forum for people to eat like stuff like that. But based on Ayurveda, that's healing. And I was watching a program about ghee and there was this householder who's from Kashmir who was like, she had a particular container and she said, this container is where we keep our ghee. And there is ghee at the bottom, which is hundreds of years old.
Wow. Okay.
But the main thing about ghee is it has to be made with the Bilona method. The milk that is used to make that ghee has to come from our indigenous cows, like, you know, Sahiwal and Tharparkar and Gir and all that, because they are more nutritious. The cows have to be grass-fed, because grain-fed cows that are given soy meal and stuff, that's going to be very bad quality ghee. So it has to be a proper grass-fed cow. And even in the grass-fed, if that cow is like grazing in somewhere like the forested areas of India, right, there's full of medicinal plants and the cow is eating those Ayurvedic medicinal plants, and the ghee that is made from that kind of cow's milk, that is like medicine. That is the true elixir. And then it has to be boiled till it becomes like a custard. Then they put the, you know, the rennet into it. They put the yogurt into it to make it into yogurt. They set it overnight. They keep it on these upalas, which are the cow dung cakes, overnight. And then on very low flame, it becomes yogurt. And then they churn it with their hand. They churn it with some kind of a, they call it the mat. They churn it with a wooden handle. And that wood is made of, again, some medicinal plant. Right. And then they churn it with the hand. So it's very gently churned. And then that butter is kept on the same cow dung flame. And that becomes ghee that is like Amrit. There's even a time for taking milk from the cow. So I got ghee from a local goshala here where the cow is milked at like between 3 to 5 in the morning. And the ghee is made on a full moon night. So the goshala, the gorakshak was doing all these things to ensure that the ghee that I purchased was going to be like the medicine, the immortal medicine for my body, Amrit for my body.
So do you have a brand?
Do I have a brand in mind?
Yeah, for ghee that we can buy.
You know, I don't like to give out brand names. Because the people that I buy ghee from, there is no brand name. Okay. They're all from small goshalas. We should go and inquire about small goshalas or just Google Vedic Goshala. Go to the goshala, do your due diligence, make sure the cows are being well treated. See how the calves are being treated. What happens to the bulls? How do they tell us about the process of making the ghee? You know, go look at it yourself and only then buy ghee. When we eat the right kind of ghee, our body feels light. After eating the right kind of ghee, in about 2 hours, we'll start feeling really hungry again because our body just took it all up. But if we eat the wrong kind of ghee, or if our body was already kapha imbalanced, we're going to feel very heavy after eating that ghee.
Yeah, okay.
And how do you manage in California? Do you always carry your ghee from India?
I carry my ghee from India. Or I buy certain ghees. There is a brand called Shri Radhe that I buy from Amazon. I did my due diligence on it, but I have not gone and visited them. Two Brothers Organic Farms, again, is a brand that, you know, I'm in talks with to associate with. They've invited me to come and see everything so that I'm satisfied. I like their ghee as well.
Okay, that's good to know. Okay, now you might have noticed I'm a bit under the weather. Okay, so I've had so not all cold is the same. Yeah, that's what I've heard. So how do I know if it's congestion or if it's inflammation? Like, how do you figure that out?
If something is an inflammation, then you are going to constantly get it, right? It goes down, it goes up, it goes, because the hetus, the root causes of that inflammation in your body, because of your lifestyle, it is always going to be maintained. So you keep seeing flare-ups and going down, right? It gets better when you do something to change it, but it keeps coming back. So that is a inflammation that is on a chronic level, right? But a congestion, maybe something because the weather shifted or you ate something. You ate, maybe you drank something cold at night and the next morning you're a little bit congested, right? It may give you a little headache, but you take a steam and it goes off. But an inflammation of your sinuses is going to constantly be like a dull ache, like a half a headache, swelling of puffy eyes, right? Watering of the eyes. This is going to be a constant and it keeps coming back.
Okay, so are there any home remedies to get rid of colds, basically?
Some of the best remedies are our turmeric, our tulsi, ginger, pepper, pippali. These are all spices in the kitchen. It's good to make teas out of this. Cinnamon, they're all sharp spices. Any spice that is sharp and smells strong has the power to open up our channels. So when we make tea with these kind of spices, it naturally opens up our channels. So just drinking a gut best tea with the, you know, black cumin or black seed, with a little bit of aniseed, with a little bit of coriander, with a pinch of carom, or just making a nice strong carom tea, right? We should all go to our kitchens and start tasting everything a little bit and look for things that are sharp tasting. And whatever is sharp tasting in our kitchen is going to break open that congestion and help us breathe better.
Okay. So there's nothing like a bad spice?
There's nothing like a bad spice. All spices are healing. However, there's a time and place for each spice.
Okay. Like we were talking about the modern lifestyle and how we've all become more vata, in the sense we are constantly dehydrated. We are always dry. What is the best way to hydrate the body? Is water enough? Just drinking water?
I always say that once you're on an Ayurvedic diet and lifestyle, you should stop drinking plain water. Because the whole point in Ayurveda is to maintain our metabolic fire and maintain our digestive fire. So many people wake up in the morning and because of all these viral Instagram reels showing somebody very beautiful and in their 20s or 30s, drinking like a big copper bottle full of cold water. They're drinking it early in the morning. They're like, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. I'm drinking my copper bottle water. What they've done basically is they're young. Their fire is pretty strong. But here comes a 55-year-old who's already inflamed. Their kapha is very high. They have no agni. Now they get up in the morning. They've taken a copper bottle, which is already high. It will increase vata. Copper will increase vata. They filled it up with water. They poured a liter of water into their body. What's happened is their fire has been doused. So now they're not going to feel hungry. Now after that, they're going to go pick their, you know, I have to eat my fruit salad. Now, again, there is no Agni and they're going to eat a big meal, which is heavier because it's raw. It is heavier, right? And they're going to throw in some nice soaked almonds on top. And then they're thinking, why am I not becoming healthy? Why is my body not digesting this? Why am I not starting to feel light and energized and happy, right? Their health takes a toll because they're doing all the wrong things. When we wake up in the morning, if we are challenged, if we are digestion challenged, if we have inflammation, if we have hormonal imbalance, headaches, any kind of aches and pains in the body, not feeling good, we should start our day with a gut pesti, which is the formula that I shared. Have a couple of sips. At the most, have 100 ml, which is maybe a 3/4 of a small cup. Have that much. Then go out, exercise, take a bath, feel that warmth in your gut. When you feel hungry, then eat. Now, when we eat our food, we can take sips of water to wet the food, to facilitate chewing. But we should not drink a lot of water prior to our meal. We should not drink a lot of water after our meal. Because again, we are dousing that digestive fire. The other thing we see is people say, take a big bottle and then keep sip, sip, sip all throughout the day.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst things we can do for our health. Because when we are doing that, what we are doing is we are constantly cleansing our mouth and the microbiome is shifting and we are constantly swallowing that. So all the good bacteria are going away. Our enamel is going to get hurt over time. Plaque is going to build. Our mouth is actually going to get more drier as we keep this, you know, sipping throughout the day, right? So the better than that is take a big bottle of water, how much ever you want to drink, because you sweat, you know how big you are, how much water you need. Pour it into a glass. And when that glass is done, you keep it away. For the next couple of hours, don't do anything. Don't put anything in your mouth. Then go and drink another glass of water. That's the way to drink water that will actually keep us hydrated.
That's good to know.
So, how, according to you, how in the modern world is Ayurveda still relevant? Do you ever feel when you're dealing with clients and modern day problems that because Ayurveda, like I said, is 3 million years old, you think the sages, they forgot to write a few things? Or they did not predict the problems of the modern world?
The more I study Ayurveda, the more I feel like, my God, we've not even scratched the surface of it, right? The mind-body connection is what Ayurveda said. Food is your medicine is what Ayurveda said. Prevention is better than cure is what comes from Ayurveda, right? All these are, I'm probably missing a few important things. Ayurveda comes from Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana means eternal. So this dharma is going to stay eternal because we are in a world where the physical laws are going to be eternal. As long as earth exists, physics exists, mathematics exists, there's going to be Ayurveda. And the person who gave us Ayurveda, who brought Ayurveda to the world, is a rishi called Bharadwaja. He is considered a Chiranjeevi. I'm going using many woo-woo terms and half your audience is like, you know. So what does a Chiranjeevi mean? A Chiranjeevi is somebody who's never going to die. He's always here. What does that mean? What they mean is the force from which Ayurveda, the knowledge of Ayurveda came, that is an inexhaustible source of knowledge. That knowledge is never going to be ending. That knowledge is always going to be relevant no matter what happens. 5,000 years from now, there's going to be two other humans sitting like this, and God knows how they look like. They'd probably be like half bionic, half robots, or half AI. But Ayurveda would still work if they were made of Vata, Pitta, and Kapha.
Okay. So, my last question, I think, unless something else comes up. What is Ayurveda's take on autoimmune diseases?
Autoimmune diseases is, I feel like this is more of a physician's question. I'm more of a diet and a lifestyle person. I can give you my thoughts on it, but I think a physician would be able to, you know, handle this a lot better. The way we know autoimmune diseases, the body starts attacking its own tissues because it thinks that it is in a, you know, it's its own tissues, but it's attacking it. So remember we talked about ragadi roga, right? We said that anything that attaches, any attachment is going to create disease. So when we are living in the modern world, we are running about all day, we are influenced by media, peer pressure, we're making all these decisions based on pragyaparadha, we are committing crimes against common sense, right? We are eating akala bhojana. We are eating akala meaning we are eating our food at the wrong time. We are doing ati matra. Ati means too much. Matra means quantity. We're eating too much food. We are eating food that doesn't work for us, right? I am a vata and I am eating cold, raw, dry, stale food. I'm eating yesterday, it's pizza. Not good for me. Somebody is a pitta and they are doing spicy, oily, salty, sour, including fermented. They're overdoing these kind of foods. So a pitta person from South India saying, I eat dosas every day is like waving a big flag and saying, hey, disease, come and get me, right? A kapha person is eating too much dairy, nuts and sugar. They're going to be in trouble. So when we are doing these kind of pragyaparadha, committing these crimes against our common sense, our body is going to create something called as ama. Ama is the residue of incomplete digestion. These are metabolic byproducts that are not yet properly processed and eliminated from the body. Ideally, we would eat food. It would be divided properly into nourishment for our tissues and complete elimination. And the elimination would go out of our body in the normal channels, right? But these metabolites, these stay stuck to our tissues and then they start to create blockages in the inner energy. So the vata, pitta, kapha energy starts getting blocked. Now, this thing starts to get baked into our tissues over the years. As it reaches a threshold and crosses that threshold, till it reaches the threshold, the body is like, okay, fine. This is also me. I'm going to treat this like me. But after it crosses a threshold, the body, So after this metabolite that's like baked into our tissues reaches a certain threshold and crosses it, suddenly the body freaks out. Now the body is like, oh my gosh, get this out of here, and starts attacking its own self. That's when people come to practitioner like me and says like, I was just so fine. I was having such a good time. It's been years and years and I was having this whatever, you know, dal makhani every day. There was no problem, but I moved to Scotland and suddenly I cannot eat it anymore. Or you know, I moved back to India and now I can't handle this XYZ food, right? Or I just started to do this HIIT works, a workout, a HIIT workout, and then suddenly everything is hurting and this is not working out for me. Or menopause hit and then suddenly my body is like, feels like an alien body. Everything's out of control. So what is that? That is a stage where the body is now starting to attack itself. So it could be allergies, it could be aches and pains, it could be fibromyalgia, but it's all that metabolite, that ama that has stayed attached to our tissues that is now sitting and acting up. Does this make sense?
Yes, a lot of sense. This has been actually very enlightening, the whole conversation, and we could go on. Like I know I've said my last question, but like just with this I have like 10,000 more coming into my head. But probably we should leave it for next time because we've already spoken quite a while. And but it was such a pleasure talking to you.
Such a pleasure speaking to you as well, Prachi. The mosquitoes are telling me to leave.
Yes, so maybe once you're back in California, we'll do a round two or something to get more of your knowledge.
Definitely.
So thank you so much. Such a great idea. Thank you for being here today.
Such a pleasure. Namaste.
Thank you.